This is a special Trenches Technology podcast series with your host, Sharon Bueno, Managing Editor of Trenches Technology Magazine. We're celebrating 50 years of cured-in-place pipe. Welcome back to another episode of the Trenches Technology podcast. We are continuing our look at cured-in-place pipe turning 50 in 2021. On this episode, we are talking about Trenches Rehab research and education and how it has evolved over the last 50 years. Joining me is Dr. John Matthews, Executive Director of the Trenches Technology Center. So welcome, John. I appreciate you taking some time to talk with me on the podcast.
Thanks, Sharon.
So when we get started, maybe you can tell us a little bit about your background.
Sure. Yeah. So I've been at the center now for 4 years and been involved in Trenches my whole career. I studied here at TTC when I was doing my graduate school and worked in the industry for about 8 years for a couple different companies. And so overall, 16 years in Trenches industry.
So how did you get involved in Trenches technology? And what is it about this industry that interests you, intrigues you?
So I actually got involved, like I mentioned, my whole career has been in Trenches. So I got involved as a student, actually, through a student chapter of NASTT here at Louisiana Tech, and going to No Dig, you know, meeting folks like yourself. Got very intrigued with all the processes and all the people. And I think that's probably what it is about the industry is the people are enjoyable to work with. There's a lot of people that have been in there their whole career, just like me, of course, much longer. And so I just got sort of fascinated about it as a young person, you know, as a 21-year-old, and just never left.
As I said, Cured in Place is turning 50 in 2021. I know you have not been in the industry for 50 years, obviously, but from your chair, how has the Cured in Place process evolved over that time?
Oh, it's evolved quite a bit. Yeah, you're right. So just in what I've seen, it's evolved in the last 16 years. But over the whole 50 years, I mean, it started out as a process for sanitary sewers, basically gravity-fed sewers. And it's still a big player in that section of the market. But the evolution has been tremendous. I mean, it's applied in all types of assets now, from water and gas and pressure and small, large laterals, services, you know, pretty much every component of the industry. In fact, it's even been modified to be used on manholes, you know, although it's not the exact same process. So it's come from, you know, a very slim segment of the industry to being applicable to virtually all segments of the industry. So that's been the big part of the evolution.
What impact has the use of cured in place had on the rehab market in the care of underground infrastructure?
I think what I've seen from my vantage point has been, it's essentially the go-to technique when it comes to sanitary repair, especially for smaller, or I would say your typical diameter ranges. I mean, many municipal owners of various sizes, and not just large owners, it's almost a default option, you know. Instead of historically looking at why or why not they could use open cut, if you have a typical sized sanitary sewer, gravity fed sewer, you're probably asking yourself, why wouldn't I use CIPP, to be honest? That's sort of where it's come to in the market, again, from where I sit. And so it has a big segment of that market. It's not always applicable. You know, maybe there's a reason to do something else, but it is sort of the default option. You know, you sort of see, you know, why can't I do this? And is there something better than this? There may or may not be, but it's your default option now. And historically, it wasn't like that, you know. And it's not like that in other segments of the industry still. You may default to open cut or something else, but for sanitary, you know, smaller diameters, it's your default option.
Describe from your perspective what the cured-in-place market is today. How is it going?
I think it's going well. I mean, we see it applied in a lot of places. Again, like I mentioned, it's there's more segments of the industry that use CIPP now. There's still opportunity for growth. There's other competitive technologies, depending on, you know, what the needs are of that specific segment. But in general, it is a strong market. There's lots of competition in the market. That's obviously something that's changed since the beginning when it was invented, which is like that with any technology. But I would say it's a very established technology. It's, you know, like you mentioned, 50 years, although it continues to, you know, change and get optimized. And we'll talk about that some when we talk about research probably. But, you know, the market it's broad, it's sanitary, it's distribution on pressure, it's even gas, distribution on gas mains, some on transmission. And so there's lots of segments in the market where CIPP holds its own, if you will. And there's still opportunity for growth, and so that's a good thing. That keeps people excited, keeps more competition coming to the industry, people trying to develop, optimize, and things like that. But it's a very strong market.
Before we start talking about research and education, talk a little bit about the work in the history of the Trenches Technology Center, the kind of things you do there.
Yeah, so TTC is, we just passed our 30-year anniversary this past year. We work in all areas of trenchless. Our two primary functions are research and development and then tech transfer. So in addition to the research we do, we spend a lot of time doing training, but really tech transfer, making sure we get the information out about the latest developments that are available in the market, primarily through our municipal forums, where we are primarily focused on training municipal engineers and consulting engineers, but we do other forms of training as well. The research over the years has touched on every segment of trenchless. In the early days, the focus was primarily on new installation technology. And then it started to focus much more heavily on rehabilitation technology, CIPP. Even in the early days, there was work on CIPP, but on other rehabilitation technologies. And then for the last 15 years, another big segment of what we do has been focused on non-destructive testing, sensors, innovative materials, again, not just for CIPP, but for other segments of the rehabilitation market. So over the years, we've sort of crossed through every aspect of trenchless technologies, and now even we're still active in, I would say, all three major segments, from station to new installation to condition assessment. So it's a really exciting place to work. We pretty much work with everybody in the industry over the years and have, you know, a very active industry advisory board, large board. We have over 50 members from all segments of the industry. So yeah, it's grown a lot over the 30 years, but it's been steady in its goal of research development and tech transfer of trenches technology.
The research involving trenches technology incurred in place has been very important over the years to push the industry forward. What have been some of the more notable research projects involving incurred in place that TTC has been involved in? I know you did a styrene collaborative study in recent years, but what has been some of the important research projects you've worked on?
Yeah, well, some of the early work, but before I was at the center, you know, when the technology was still relatively new when the center came about, it was about 20 years old. Some of the standards were still being developed. And so some of the early work was on essentially, I would say, refining some of those design standards and looking at some of those factors, you know, very technical work, doing lots of testing and validation to sort of flush out what some of those design parameters should be, which is important work, and it's necessary with any new technology. In fact, we're doing some of that research now for other technology. So that was some of the early work. And then from there, you know, it got more advanced, where we looked into some very high level finite element modeling. And the impacts of different variations, things like folds, bends, stuff like that. So the impacts of that on CIPP and its design, And then after that, we've done a lot of work on the materials themselves. You know, materials have continued to improve, and this is not things that we're only doing internally. You know, we're working with outside partners, but looking at the impacts of the addition of reinforcement, the impacts of new curing methods, all of those types of things are probably been the primary focus of the last 10 years. And then the last 3 or 4 years, we have worked on that, the topic of emissions, primarily related to steam cure, CIPP. That's been a very interesting area for us to focus on. We've done other environmental related things connected to trenchless in the past. This is the first one really directly related to CIPP. And so that study that we led was published about a year ago, actually now. I think it was published in January of 2020 for NASCO, where we looked at the emissions. We made some recommendations on how to better manage steam cure sites. But one of the key findings was that the potential problems were not as nearly as troublesome as some other studies had showed. And so that was really the focus of the study, was to see, you know, how big a problem is there potentially, and depending on what degree of problem there is, you know, what are some recommendations that can help us manage those sites better. So that work was published. It's been very well received, and we've seen lots of municipalities and contractors incorporate those recommendations into both their specifications and their work practices. So it's nice to see when research can be applied in a very practical way. And that's what the TTC is all about.
Now, when we talk about things in the magazine, a lot of case studies and new products get the highlights, it seems like. But research is also very important to any industry. Can you talk a little bit about the importance of cured-in-place research and how it has impacted trenchless technology industry?
Yeah, I mean, research is a huge part, I would say, of any industry, but of trenchless. And we regularly say this, I think people like my dad are involved in it, but even people just associated with industry, our industry tends to change pretty quickly, or at least the technologies develop quickly. I think we have a very innovative workforce, I would say. It's just the nature of the people that work in the business. They try something in the field. They think they can do it better. They come up with a new idea. You know, they implement it. And that's been the driver of the industry as a whole. And it's no different with CIPP. Again, we talked about CIPP and its level of development. I mean, it's highly developed. It's commonly used as a default option. But there's always the opportunity to innovate, to optimize. So it's not just about adding, you know, something shiny to it, you know, to make it more attractive. It's about actually making it, you know, even better. And so that's where research really continues to play a part in trenchless and in CIPP. And so we sort of sit in a unique position here where we get to, you know, try to come up with our own ideas when the time is right. But we also get the opportunity to work with a lot of these innovative people in the industry. You know, sometimes they're just coming to us after they've pretty much already flushed out the idea and they're looking for some type of third party validation, which we love doing that as well. You know, hopefully we can help them make their idea better. But, you know, it can be even more exciting when we come up with our own ideas and get to develop them in-house as well. So that's where research continues to play a big part in CIPP. And there's, like I said, there's still opportunities to advance the technology. There's still segments of the market where it's not a major player. And so there's still opportunities to improve upon lots of things related to materials and the cost, you know, the speed, the curing, all different types of aspects related to CIPP. So there's still a lot of opportunity for research.
From your position, what have been some of the biggest innovations to the cured in place process?
Well, you know, the initial technology, the big thing was the inversion method itself. You know, that whole thing was innovative. We take it for granted now because many of the CIPP products on the market are still using inversion, not all of them. But over the years, there's been innovations related to the materials themselves just becoming stronger. whether it be with the resins themselves or reinforcements, which I mentioned, that gave you the opportunity to be able to have thinner liners, be able to do larger pipes, you know, take on higher loads. And then from there, the next, innovation was being able to work in pressure systems. And then from there, if you're not working in a sewer pressure system to water, you know, there's been innovations on the resins themselves to make them safe for drinking water. And then again, improving up on the strength of the materials to be able to apply them in gas systems, which are higher pressure. So, you know, taking on even more loads and still having a thin wall. There's been innovations when it comes to both reinstating services and laterals, but also repairing services and laterals themselves. The lateral market has gone from standalone liners, very similar to what we see on main lines, to then having what we're called the top hat liners and then the T liners. And it's kind of gone full circle where you essentially have a full-on repair system now for laterals as well. And we know laterals are a big part of eliminating infiltration and inflow in a sewer. That was a big innovation. A lot of that is done with CIPP, not all of it, but so the innovations have just continued to expand, to continue to take on more segments of the market, the underground infrastructure market. And again, there's still some improvements for innovating in certain areas, and we think that's going to continue to happen because as you have these innovators out there in the field, they're working on a system, they see another problem, they think, well, maybe we can apply CFPP there. How can we do it? So that's going to continue to happen, but that's just my ideas on some of the innovations that have taken place thus far.
How has the approach to cured-in-place research evolved and changed over the years?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think again, early on, it was more about CIPP was novel; people weren't using it, maybe had never heard of it, and so you essentially had to prove yourself. It's like with any new technique, show me that this will actually work. And again, in the beginning, it was only, show me this will work when there's absolutely no way I can dig this pipe up. There's no way for me to replace it. Prove to me that CIPP is going to work here. And so that's really what the early research was about. Validating the technology was even capable, proving out that the designs were representative of what was being done. I don't know if I mentioned this earlier. I don't think I did, but the technology is only 50 years old. The design life for CIPP is 50 years. So, proving that was important because, up until this year, we couldn't even say we'd have a liner in the ground for 50 years. So it was all, it was all wishful thinking, if you will. But there was a lot of work that went into that, and there was a lot of research involved with proving that out. And there was a lot of retrospective work. So looking back at old liners that have been installed over the years, some of that work was led by the EPA and done here at the TTC. Some of that work was done at other universities and other consultants, actually around the world. Even the first installation there in the UK 50 years ago, they've done retrospectives on that liner to see how well it's performed over the years. And so early on, it was about proving the technology. And then later, it was just about optimizing. It's about optimizing what you have and also being able to go into new segments. So that's really been the key. And, as you've gone into new segments, specifically like the pressure market, you kind of have to start all over. Okay, prove to me now that this is going to work in a pressure system. Prove to me it's safe. Prove to me that the designs, because they're not exactly the same when you're dealing with a pressure system, prove to me that those are actually representative of what we're getting. Prove the quality control measures that you're implementing are showing me that what's in the ground is representative. And research has a toe or a finger in all of that. It kind of has to be there to be ready to either modify technology, or one of the things we've also been focused on here, and I know other researchers as well, is modifying testing standards and the way things are tested. When you have new products or you have new innovations on products, you don't have standard tests. You can't just say, okay, test it this way. It might not apply. Maybe something's changed or maybe the way the material is constructed now or cured now, you can't test it with maybe a standard method. And so we spend a lot of time on that, trying to make sure that the test methods that are used are representative and can be modified when needed to be applied to new techniques.
I want to talk a little bit about education, which I think this question is perfect for you because you, over the years, have gone through many trenchless programs yourself, and you also are now an educator as well. You've worked at the TTC. How has the approach to cured in place rehab education evolved over the years, and how important has that been as this industry continues to age and its early pioneers, per se, are now perhaps taking a step back or retiring? How important is that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And actually could probably have a really long answer because the education is probably changed so much. I honestly have no knowledge of what the education process was in the early years. I assume it was a lot of, just a few people that had tried it out, maybe speaking at a conference here and there. And of course, in the early years, we didn't have that many even conference outlets for trenchless. So obviously that's way different now, between NESTT and other organizations and ISTT at the international level. There's lots of opportunity to do training. I would say, one of the things, and I've been involved with NESTT, as I mentioned from the beginning, one of the things we have to remind ourselves even is, don't forget there's still people that are new coming to the industry that even need that basic education. What is CIPP? And so we take care to do that. We have that in some of our training courses at NESTT, just to, make sure we go over the basics. And then we have the more advanced topics, at the conference and post-conference for, people that have been in the industry too, that are seasoned, that are looking for new information. And so I say that's one thing. That's one way education has changed from, just a few people out there speaking the good word about what CIPP could do to now you have very, a wide range of educational options from your basics to your expert level. So that's been useful for the industry. Of course, we do training here, as I mentioned, from the center's perspective. And I would say we tend to fall a little bit on that little bit more advanced, not so much on the novel. So a lot of times when we're training municipal engineers, we expect that they know a lot of the basics, although we'll cover it a little bit, but then we typically jump pretty fast to, what are your latest developments? What are the things we're seeing being applied successfully now that maybe weren't a few years ago? So that's sort of the segment where we play and where we try to do most of our training. And of course, our training is not just CIPP, but trenchless in general. And then the other aspect, which I think has come, it just has to have come a long way, is at the university level. It's what, 17 or 18 years ago when I got involved at NESTT, there was only a handful, maybe 10 student chapters of NESTT, which have really been serving as the vehicle to bring in, new engineers and new constructors into our industry. And we've doubled that since. We have about 20 now. And so that's a good start. But also just, the availability of educational courses for those students at their university itself. We've been lucky here. We've had some great leadership at TTC. And so there's been many, many engineers and constructors that have graduated at Louisiana Tech that maybe never worked in trenchless, but probably heard of it, a little dose of it in a class here or there. But over the last 20 years or so, we've had, multiple courses that are offered, mostly as electives, so they're not core courses, but giving the students an opportunity to get more education about trenchless. And what I've learned recently is, there's more universities that are doing that, which is great. Not every university that has a student chapter is necessarily teaching a course in trenchless or CIPP. But not necessarily every university that doesn't have a student chapter is not doing that. I've learned that recently, that there's some professors out there that are using some of this in their classes, and they're not even involved in NESTT. So that shows me that it's it's becoming more widespread, but there's always a need to educate more. And you're right. We have, you know, senior leaders in the industry that are moving on. Of course, they do a lot of their own training in-house. That seems to be still the main way most people are learning trenchless is at their job. They might not have that much exposure in college or even in their first few jobs, but they're learning on the job. They're learning from experts at their job. We have to continue to provide as much training as we can as an industry and for universities as well, because there's a good job market in this industry. And we've seen that, you know, everybody's been hit hard by this pandemic. Nobody's immune to it. Trenchless market's done pretty good, at least this year. I think that's been pretty widespread and reported on. So there's still a need for people to come into this industry, and you can make a good career out of it.
What's ahead, do you think, for SIP research in the coming years? I know, like, you talked a little bit about the pandemic. I'm not sure how that's impacted what you've been doing this past year from a research standpoint, or even research that is planned maybe for next year. But what kind of things are ahead for SIP research?
Yeah, that's a great question. There has been impacts from the pandemic. So most of the research we do, and maybe I mentioned this, it is industry, well, not just industry related, it's industry funded. So we're working closely with industry on large majority, so maybe 70 to 80% of our research. And so we have seen that take a little bit of a step back, you know, as people are planning and, you know, rightfully so, making sure that they're being responsible financially as they move forward. I can tell you that so for the first few months, we saw some things start to wind down and, you know, people hold back a little bit. In the last 2 months, we've seen it. I don't know if this is 100% true, but it almost feels like it's back to normal. I mean, companies are looking to invest in research. And specifically, we've had multiple that are working in CIPP reach out to us in the last 2 months, but other areas as well. And so I can say that with confidence that we're seeing it rebound almost back to normal, which is great news. And again, I think that's a reflection of the industry just doing well in general. You know, people were probably being conservative with their research dollars while they waited to see how things were going to shake out. But their work pretty much continued on. And so that lends itself to picking back up on the research side. And the research specifically that we've seen the most interest in, and this hasn't changed even before the pandemic, it's primarily been in the pressure markets, and it's basically looking at pushing the envelope more in the pressure market. So higher pressure systems, larger diameters, you know, so material optimizations that relate to that. Some related to service reinstatements, you know, all things related to pressure, actually. And so some of the recent discussions we've had and gone out have been related specifically to that. So looking at some short-term validations, long-term validations, you know, anytime you have a new modification or a new technique or a new modification on CIPP, again, you have to prove it out. You have to show that it's going to work in the long term. So we're doing some, planning to do some more advanced long-term testing, monitoring, again, larger diameters, stuff like that. And so that hasn't changed. Again, all that discussion has been happening since I came back to TTC. So the last 4 years, that's been probably one of the biggest thrust areas that we've seen here, and specifically related to pressure systems, not just CIPP, but a lot of CIPP. And so I see that to continue to evolve. One of the things we've that hasn't been active, but there has been lots of discussion about, has been related to the curing technologies. You know, some of the curing methods have been around forever, you know, steam, water. Some have been around not as long, but much more widespread now, like UV. There has been some innovations there, both here internally and some other external partners that we've talked to. And so that's been something I've sort of watched with interest to see, is there an opportunity to really improve on the curing itself? So that perhaps could be in a direction that's coming in future years. I don't have anything to comment specifically other than to say I've just seen a few things there where I think there's some chance for some innovations as it relates to curing.
What's ahead for the SIP market in general, you think, going forward?
I think continue to take on bigger segments of the pressure market. For a while there, I thought also the gas market itself would start to expand. And now there's there's some work at the federal level that's looking at trenchless options for the gas market in a much more broader sense, so not just CIPP. And so that could be good for CIPP. That could open up some people's eyes to the use and the availability of CIPP for gas. I mean, some people are doing it regularly. Many are not doing it at all. That's sort of the way it started on the water systems as well. And we're starting to see that change. So, and I feel like I've been saying this for a few years. So some people might hear this and think, he always says that, but I still believe it. I think it's going to continue to take on more of the pressure market, not just CIPP, but CIPP is one of the main technologies. And so I see it continuing to go ahead there. I think one of the things that needs to happen for that to take place is the same thing that happened on the sewer market, is you're going to need to have more installers. So in a sense, more competition that'll help lower the cost some. We've seen the costs come way down on the sewer market over the years as competition has increased. So it's just basic economic principles. And so I think that'll continue to happen in the pressure market as well, which will help CIPP take a bigger segment of the market.
Well, we've heard things coming up regarding pressure pipe over the last few years as well. So you're not championing that segment alone. You're not alone out there, John.
Yeah. I feel like I'm not crazy about that. I feel like I've been saying it though for 10 years. So every time I say it, I have to add a few years, but it's true. I mean, we've seen more market get taken on by it, and there's still more opportunity. So it'll continue to grow.
So SIP is turning 50. How big of a milestone is that in your mind?
Yeah, I think it's big. I think the one thing I mentioned earlier was, you know, we designed CIPP for 50 years, and up until this year, we didn't even know if that was physically possible. You know, we have all of our research and we have all of our testing, but now we can actually say, look, here it is. And it was the first one. It's not just, you know, the best one. It's the first one. We didn't have any standards. We didn't have any, a lot of procedures and protocols. It was the first one. It was a great idea. And it's still on the ground. It's actually still doing quite well. And so just think about how all the improvements and innovations that have been made since then, the technology has gotten even better. And so we feel really good about that. And that's why 50 years is important. And another thing, actually, back to your question about where is CIPP research going, that lends its thought to, hey, maybe we can design this to last longer. Mm-hmm. And there's some work going on in that area now and trying to prove that out with some of the same testing that we use to show that it'll last 50 years, you know, and some of the improvements that have been made in the materials, you know, maybe it can last even longer, and maybe we can improve upon our design procedures as well. So that's why it's a big number.
I want to thank John Matthews for joining me on the podcast today. To read more about Cured in Place Pipe Turning 50, check out our January 2021 issue of Trenchless Technology, finding it in your mailbox, inbox, or online at trenchlesstechnology.com. This has been a Trenchless Technology podcast. To hear more of my conversations about the trenchless industry, go to trenchlesstechnology.com/podcast.